Welcome to another episode of Reads on the Bitcoin Well podcast channel. This is Zach, and happy Saturday. The weather is beautiful here in Florida, and Bitcoin is gaining some ground with price fluctuating around $65,000. Some recent news about Jane Street manipulating the Bitcoin price has everyone bullish that now the price can resume its upward trend now that they've been called out. I don't know if we can blame the entire crash on one Wall Street firm, but it is interesting to see how Bitcoin has become the focal point for so many banking and Wall Street investors that only a few years ago were calling Bitcoin rat poison and threatening to fire employees if they were caught trading it. Bitcoin may be the most honest and transparent money that's ever existed, but it was birthed into a fiat world run by scammers and market manipulators. I have no doubt that Bitcoin will help fix this system over time, but before we get to that point, make sure you focus on buying and holding real Bitcoin in your own wallet, not playing games with leverage and lending out your Bitcoin to companies that don't have your best interests in mind. With that said, today we have an interesting blog written by Carl of Bitcoin Well, talking about taking a step back and looking at Bitcoin with fresh eyes. He asked the question, how can we make Bitcoin more beautiful and elegant to use? How can we take the fear and overwhelm people have when starting their Bitcoin journey and turn Bitcoin into a natural extension of how you interact with the world? Just a reminder, you can always email me at z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. And I'll answer any and all questions and feedback. So without further ado, let's jump in. Code, beauty, and the void. Why Bitcoin needs a design revolution. By Carl Frisco. What Buckminster Fuller, Blaise Pascal, and behavioral science can teach us about mass adoption. There's a certain irony in Bitcoin's current predicament. For 15 years, the protocol has operated with perfect uptime. No crashes, no bailouts, no central point of failure. In a world where banks print money through credit expansion, central bankers manipulate interest rates, and trusted intermediaries routinely betray that trust, Bitcoin has simply worked. The math has been proven. The code has been battle-tested. By any reasonable technological standard, we have won. And yet the average person remains terrified to use it. This is what I call the adoption wall. And it has nothing to do with intelligence. The grandmother who manages her entire life through an iPhone, the small business owner who navigates complex tax software, the first-generation immigrant who sends remittances across borders through labyrinthine banking apps, these people are not stupid. They master difficult tools every day. The problem is not that Bitcoin is too complex for humans. The problem is that Bitcoin's tools were never designed for humans. We have spent 15 years building the most robust monetary engine in history. What we have failed to build is a chassis anyone wants to drive. The thesis of this essay is simple. Bitcoin's next adoption wave will not come from protocol upgrades, from Lightning improvements, or from institutional ETF adoption. It will come from designers who understand something the cypherpunks largely ignored, that human beings do not adopt technology through logic alone. They adopt it through trust, through beauty, through feeling. We are, in essence, selling a hard asset with soft software. And until we bridge the gap between the code, which is true, and the human, who needs to feel that truth, we will remain stuck behind this wall. A crucial clarification before we proceed. This essay is concerned specifically with self-custody. There are custodial Bitcoin products with polished interfaces, some of them quite beautiful, but custodial solutions recreate the very trust dependencies that Bitcoin was designed to eliminate. If the goal is merely a pretty app that holds your keys for you, the design problem is trivial. The hard problem, the one we're solving, is making self-custody intuitive, beautiful, and accessible to a billion people who have never heard of a seed phrase. That is the mountain we are here to climb. Part 1, the diagnosis. To understand why self-custody remains frightening, we need to diagnose the problem precisely. Three thinkers offer complementary lenses. One explains what is wrong with how we build, the second explains why it matters to human perception, and the third reveals the psychological consequence. Together, they form a complete picture of the adoption wall. Buckminster Fuller was one of the 20th century's greatest polymaths, architect, systems theorist, inventor of the geodesic dome, and author of over 30 books attempting to comprehend Earth as an integrated operating system. His 1981 work, Critical Path, remains one of the most ambitious attempts to chart humanity's trajectory from scarcity to abundance, arguing that technological progress, properly directed, could provide a high standard of living for all humans without ecological destruction or political coercion. Central to Fuller's worldview was a concept he called ephemeralization, the principle of doing more with less. Fuller believed that technological progress should make complexity invisible. The user of a well-designed system should not need to understand the machinery. They should simply benefit from its outputs. Each generation of technology, properly designed, should bury the previous generation's complexity beneath a simpler interface. Fuller famously described Earth as Spaceship Earth, a vessel hurtling through space, powered by solar energy, requiring careful stewardship of finite resources. His vision was not merely technical, but civilizational. Humanity needed to become competent stewards of a planetary system, which required tools that abstracted away unnecessary complexity so humans could focus on higher order problems. If Bitcoin is anything, it is the monetary system for Spaceship Earth. Energy-based, scarce, incorruptible by political whim. It is precisely the kind of tool Fuller would have celebrated, a global, permissionless, trustless coordination mechanism for value transfer. The code embodies Fuller's vision perfectly. But here is the problem. The machinery is far too visible. When a new user attempts self-custody today, they're confronted with concepts that should be entirely hidden from view. Seed phrases, UTXOs, fee rates, mempool congestion, derivation paths, these are the gears and pistons of the engine, fascinating to engineers, meaningless and frightening to anyone else. The average person does not want to be a mechanic. They want to be a driver. They want to turn the key, press the accelerator, and arrive at their destination. Instead, we hand them a wrench and a schematic and wonder why they walk away. Consider how far ephemeralization has already taken us in other domains. 50 years ago, operating a computer required understanding punch cards and assembly language. 20 years ago, it required understanding file systems and driver installations. Today, a toddler can navigate an iPad without any concept of the operating system running beneath the glass, and we stand on the cusp of another leap. Within a decade, most people will not even drive their digital experiences, or their cars for that matter. An AI agent will handle navigation entirely, taking users to their destination through natural language requests. The very concept of using an app may become as archaic as dialing a rotary phone. This is Fuller's vision fully realized. Technology so advanced it becomes invisible, so intuitive it requires no instruction manual, so deeply ephemeralized that the human simply states an intention and the system delivers. Bitcoin's protocol layer is ready for this future. Its interface layer is stuck in 1995. Fuller would diagnose this as a failure of ephemeralization. The technology works beautifully beneath the surface. We have simply refused to build the surface. We have built a monetary network for the 21st century and wrapped it in experiences from a previous era. The path forward requires burying the complexity, not celebrating it. The goal is not users who understand UTXOs. The goal is users who never need to know the word exists. But visible complexity is only the first problem. The second is more subtle. Even when users can navigate the complexity, the entire experience feels dangerous. This is where Fuller's diagnosis hands off to our next thinker. The design firm Sagmeister and Walsh made their reputation arguing a position that most engineers find uncomfortable. Beauty is not superficial. It is functional. In their 2018 book, Beauty, Stefan Sagmeister and Jessica Walsh mount a comprehensive argument against the 20th century design orthodoxy that dismissed aesthetics as mere decoration. Drawing on research from neuroscience, evolutionary biology, and behavioral psychology, they demonstrate that beauty is not a luxury or an indulgence. It is a fundamental human need, as essential to well-being as nutrition or shelter. But Sagmeister and Walsh go further than merely defending beauty's importance. They argue something more controversial, something that runs against decades of postmodern relativism. Beauty is objective. This does not mean that all people agree on all aesthetic questions, or that cultural variation does not exist. It means that certain formal properties, such as symmetry, proportion, harmony, and the mathematical relationships we find in nature, the golden ratio, fractal patterns, organic curves, produce reliable, positive responses across cultures and throughout history. These are not arbitrary preferences. They are features of human perception shaped by millions of years of evolution. Why would evolution produce objective aesthetic responses? Because beauty was a survival signal. Symmetry in a face indicated genetic health. Lush green landscapes indicated water and food. Certain proportions in shelter indicated structural integrity. Our ancestors who could rapidly assess these signals, who felt drawn toward beauty and repelled by ugliness, survived to reproduce. Those feelings were not incidental. They were adaptive. This has profound implications for design. If beauty is objective, then it is not a matter of taste that can be dismissed or delegated to marketing. It is a technical requirement, as real as load-bearing capacity in architecture or cryptographic security in software. An ugly experience is not merely unpleasant, it is dysfunctional. It fails to communicate safety. It fails to inspire trust. It fails at the fundamental job of bridging human perception and technical capability. Now consider the entire experience of Bitcoin self-custody through this lens. It is not merely that wallet interfaces lack polish, though many do. The deeper problem is that the complete self-custody experience, from first exposure to daily use, is saturated with ugliness in the precise sense Sagmeister and Walsh describe. It signals danger rather than safety, fragility rather than permanence, and anxiety rather than peace. Begin with the seed phrase, 12 or 24 words generated randomly, which constitute the entirety of your claim to your wealth. Lose them and everything is gone. No recovery, no customer support, no appeals process. The words themselves are arbitrary, meaningless, and cold, and you must preserve them forever. How do people preserve them? They write them on paper, fragile, flammable, degradable, or they stamp them into steel plates, industrial, utilitarian, the aesthetic of a machine shop rather than a jewelry box. They hide these plates in safes, in safety deposit boxes, in secret locations. The entire ritual feels less like securing generational wealth and more like burying evidence. Then there is the hardware wallet. Many models look like cheap USB drives or obsolete calculators. The screens are small, monochrome, utilitarian. The buttons are plasticky. The experience of using one, plugging it into a computer, navigating cryptographic prompts, it feels technical and precarious. Nothing about it says vault. Everything about it says prototype. This is what Sagmeister and Walsh's framework reveals. The problem is not that self-custody apps need better color palettes, though some do. The problem is that the entire experience fails the beauty test. Every touchpoint, from seed generation to verification to long-term storage, signals danger to the human nervous system. The lizard brain, doing exactly what evolution designed it to do, screams, "This is not safe." We can protest that this is irrational, that the underlying cryptography is perfectly secure, and we would be correct. We would also be completely missing the point. Human adoption does not run on correctness. It runs on trust. And trust is built through signals that predate language itself. The self-custody experience is ugly. And ugly, as Sagmeister and Walsh prove, is not a superficial complaint. It is a functional failure. An experience that feels dangerous will be avoided, regardless of how mathematically secure it is. This brings us to the psychological consequence of visible complexity wrapped in ugliness. The 17th century philosopher Blaise Pascal was preoccupied with a peculiar human tendency he called divertissement, usually translated as distraction or diversion. Pascal observed that human beings seem almost pathologically incapable of sitting still. We fill every moment with noise, activity, entertainment, anything to avoid confronting the void of our own thoughts. Pascal saw this as a spiritual sickness, a flight from the contemplation that might lead us toward deeper truths. Pascal's insights reveal the psychological consequence of the failures Fuller and Sagmeister diagnosed. When complexity is visible and the experience signals danger, anxiety is inevitable. The human nervous system, doing exactly what evolution designed it to do, sounds the alarm, and anxious humans seek relief. The cryptocurrency industry understood this, perhaps intuitively. Faced with users who found self-custody confusing and frightening, the market responded with custodial solutions that buried the complexity. No seed phrases, no UTXOs, no hardware wallets or steel plates. Just download an app, create an account, and buy. But these custodial platforms did not solve the anxiety problem, they exploited it. Rather than designing for the peace that should accompany sound money, they built casinos, flashing price charts, green and red candles updating in real time, push notifications announcing every market tremor, leverage trading, meme coins, gamification everywhere. The entire UX was engineered to trigger Pascal's divertissement, to keep the user checking, reacting, and trading. The underlying anxiety about money, about the future, about whether any of this was real, was not addressed. It was monetized. This is the bitter irony of the current landscape. Custodial platforms solved the ugliness of self-custody by creating a different kind of ugliness, the spiritual poverty of the casino floor. They traded one form of anxiety, the fear of losing your keys, for another, the fear of missing out, the dopamine treadmill, the endless price watching. Users escaped the wrench attack paranoia only to find themselves on slot machines. Meanwhile, the entire philosophical argument for Bitcoin as a savings technology rests in low time preference, the willingness to defer gratification, to sit still, to let wealth accumulate quietly over years and decades. A savings tool should feel like a cathedral, quiet, solid, timeless. Instead, the industry built slot machines, and users, fleeing the anxiety of self-custody, walked right into them. This is the psychological trap we must escape. Self-custody, as currently designed, generates anxiety through visible complexity and ugly experiences. Custodial platforms offer relief from that anxiety, but most redirect it into compulsive engagement. Neither path leads to the peace that Bitcoin promises. Neither path produces low time preference savers. The three diagnoses now form a complete picture. Visible complexity, from Fuller, creates confusion, which is wrapped in ugly experiences, from Sagmeister, that signal danger, which produces anxiety that custodial platforms exploit through divertissement, from Pascal. Each flaw feeds the next, and together, they form the adoption wall. Part 2, the psychologic gap. Philosophy can diagnose problems, but bridging the gap between theory and market reality requires something more grounded. For that, we turn to Rory Sutherland, the advertising executive and behavioral economist whose book Alchemy dissects the irrational logic by which humans actually make decisions. Sutherland draws a crucial distinction between logic and psychologic. Engineers build for logic, efficiency, optimization, minimizing frictions. Humans, however, operate on psychologic. We make decisions based on signals, feelings, and subconscious pattern matching that often contradicts rational analysis. His favorite example involves gold. Why is gold valuable? The economist's answer involves scarcity, fungibility, and durability, all perfectly logical. But Sutherland points out something deeper. Gold is valuable because it is heavy. When you hold a gold bar, you feel its weight. Your muscles engage, your body registers mass, your nervous system concludes this is substantial. A digital entry in a database, no matter how mathematically secure, simply does not carry the same psychological gravity. It feels weightless, ephemeral, easy come, easy go. This, incidentally, is what Peter Schiff suffers from. Schiff is not stupid. His arguments against fiat currency are largely correct. But his famous inability to appreciate Bitcoin stems from psychologic completely dominating his mental framework. He cannot feel digital scarcity because there is nothing to hold, nothing to weigh, nothing to bite. His entire valuation heuristic depends on physical sensation, which means he will likely never get it, no matter how many times the logical arguments are explained. Schiff is not arguing against Bitcoin's property. He is confessing the limits of his own perceptual framework. This presents Bitcoin with a paradox. In our rush to make cryptocurrency apps frictionless and lightweight, we may be inadvertently signaling that the money itself is cheap, ephemeral, easy come, easy go. We have stripped away the theater, and in so doing, we have stripped away the psychological weight that makes people feel their savings are secure. Sutherland would argue that we need to restore the theater. Not through deception, Bitcoin's underlying security is genuine, but through design that communicates that security in a language the human nervous system understands. The code is true. The question is whether we can make it feel true. Part 3, the horizon. Now we turn from diagnoses to speculation. What follows is not a blueprint, not a product roadmap, not even a fully coherent proposal. It is a thought experiment, an attempt to imagine what self-custody might look like if we took the preceding analysis seriously and threw out every assumption inherited from the current cold storage paradigm. Think of it as a science fiction for Bitcoin UX. Wildly incomplete, probably naive in ways that security engineers will immediately identify, but perhaps useful as a provocation. Sometimes the best way to find a new path is to imagine an impossible destination and then work backwards. So in the spirit of playful speculation, what if we tried to build the opposite of everything that currently exists? Current self-custody is defined by invisibility, portability, and secrecy. Your keys live on a device designed to be hidden. Security comes from obscurity. The aesthetic is the fugitives. Bury the evidence, trust no one, leave no trace. What if we inverted all of that? Imagine a self-custody experience built around visibility, permanence, and presence. Call it Hearth. Not because the name matters, but because the metaphor does. What if Bitcoin lived not in hiding, but at the center of your home? At the center of this thought experiment is a physical object, not a device designed to be hidden in a drawer, but one designed to be displayed. Dense materials, brass, marble, tungsten, cold to the touch. It sits on your desk or mantle like an heirloom clock, a sculpture, something that belongs in a home rather than a server room. This object, call it the anchor, holds your keys. But you never see them. There is no screen, no buttons, no seed phrase ceremony. The device knows you through biometrics. The machinery is completely invisible. When you need to sign a transaction, you walk to the anchor and place your hand on it. That physical act, crossing your living room, touching cold brass, feeling the weight of the object, becomes the ritual that replaces passwords and cryptographic prompts. The walk creates friction proportional to significance. The touch confirms identity. The weight satisfies the lizard brain's need to feel that something real is happening. You can point to the object and say, "That is my savings." Your wealth has a locus, a home, a hearth. The anchor pairs with a companion app, but this app shows nothing of the protocol layer. No alphanumeric addresses, no fee selection, no UTXO management, no derivation paths. The user interacts entirely through intent. The anchor is the vault, not the spending wallet. The simpler wallets exist for everyday transactions. A hot lightning wallet on your phone for coffee, a family wallet for shared expenses. The anchor sits beneath all of these. The deep storage from which you periodically replenish. To move Bitcoin from savings to spending, you open the app and select the destination, spending wallet or family fund. You specify an amount, you confirm. The app tells you to authenticate with your anchor. You walk across the room, place your hand on the brass, and the transaction signs. The vault has released funds to your everyday wallet, silently handling UTXO selection, fee estimation, and routing. You expressed intent. The system delivered. The ritual matches the significance. Moving funds from deep savings to active spending should require crossing the room. It should feel weighty. Buying coffee from your hot wallet requires a tap. Replenishing that wallet from the vault requires a pilgrimage to the hearth. The friction is not a bug. It is the architecture of low time preference made physical. True ephemeralization. The user is a driver stating a destination, not a mechanic adjusting gears. The app gives the user something to engage with, but the engagement is not with wallet mechanics. It is with your relationship to your wealth over time. The interface visualizes your savings journey, not price charts, casino thinking, but growth in time, garden thinking. You see how long you have held. You track milestones, your first year, accumulation targets, your transition from spender to saver. You watch your time preference improve as you resist the urge to liquidate. The app helps you see where fiat leaks from your life. Forgotten subscriptions, impulse purchases, the death by a thousand cuts that keeps most people running in place. It directs your attention towards spending less and stacking more. You set intentions, not trading goals, but life goals. Save for a home, build generational wealth, achieve sovereignty. The interface becomes a mirror for your financial maturation. The anxious mind has somewhere to land. There are buttons to press, progress to track, milestones to celebrate, but the engagement reinforces patience rather than panic. The user tends their garden without ever touching the soil. In this thought experiment, the three layers are not separate features bolted together. They are one experience with three dimensions. You decide to send Bitcoin, you open the app, select a contact, confirm the amount, you walk to the anchor, place your hand on cold brass, feel the weight of the object, the transaction signs. You return to the app and watch your garden adjust, your timeline extend, your journey continue. Every touchpoint reinforces the same message. This is real. This is yours. This is permanent. The anxiety of self-custody dissolves into something quieter. Now, back to reality. Anyone with security engineering experience is already compiling a list of objections, and they are probably right. A visible vault in your living room paints a target. Biometrics can be coerced. Geofencing can be spoofed. The wrench attack does not disappear just because the brass is beautiful. But here is why the thought experiment might still be useful. It clarifies what we are actually optimizing for. The current self-custody paradigm optimizes for security against external threat. It succeeds. The cost of that success is an experience so ugly, so anxiety-inducing, so alien to human psychology that most people flee to custodians who then exploit their anxiety in different ways. The Herthought experiment asks, what if we optimize for psychological security as seriously as we optimize for cryptographic security? What if we treated the nervous system as a design constraint rather than an afterthought? We do not yet know how to build something that satisfies both constraints. Perhaps it's impossible. Perhaps the trade-offs are generally zero-sum. Beauty for security, weight for portability, visibility for safety. But I suspect the design space is larger than we have explored. The current paradigm was not designed. It evolved from cypherpunk assumptions that prioritize certain values: technical elegance, adversarial resistance, individual responsibility over others, accessibility, beauty, psychological peace. Those were reasonable priorities for the first 15 years. They may not be the right priorities for the next billion users. We spent 15 years building the perfect monetary engine, decentralized, incorruptible, mathematically secured. That work is done, and it was extraordinary. But the engine is not the car, and the car is not the journey. What remains to be built is the human layer, the interfaces, the aesthetics, the experiences that translate Bitcoin's technical truth into felt reality. And not just any human layer, but one that preserves the core promise of self-custody. The goal is not an app that looks pretty while a corporation holds your keys. The goal is an experience that makes holding your own keys feel natural, safe, and obvious. This essay has offered a diagnosis and a speculation. The diagnosis, I believe, is sound. Visible complexity, ugly experiences, and exploited anxiety from an adoption wall that protocol improvements alone will not breach. The speculation, the Herthought experiment, is offered more humbly. It is probably wrong in important ways, but it points towards something worth asking. What would self-custody look like if it felt as solid as a gold bar? What would it look like if the machinery truly disappeared? What would it look like if the engagement reinforced patience rather than panic? These are design problems, not protocol problems. They will be solved by people who understand human psychology as deeply as they understand cryptography. They will require courage, the courage to bury complexity that the community has historically celebrated, the courage to make Bitcoin feel different than it currently does. The code is ready. The code has been ready for years. Now, we must design the experience.